Episode 138 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded June 29th, 2017. Ladies' Night. Here.
That's the whole crew. We recalled Kyle from South Africa.
I'm back.
We said TV Dudes assemble. and you guys all just like magically showed up. It was amazing. So
Jones calling all the animals.
Les, you're gonna have to jump right in front of that mic.
Sorry,
to be heard.
It's like Tom Jones at the end of Mars Attacks calling all the animals.
He does that. He actually does that.
That joke was definitely worth leaning in for. Our listeners did not want to miss that singer.
All right, guys. Well, we are all here for Ladies' Night, which means we are talking about Orange is the New Black, Glow, both by Jenji Cohen. Is that her name?
Yeah, Jenji Cohen is executive producer on Glow at any rate.
And The Handmaid's Tale.
Which Jenji Cohen does not have an involvement with.
So... prison, wrestling, and good times. Good times, I am.
Sheer, awful dystopia.
Oh, it's an optimistic future? So, yeesh. Yeah, so, hey, I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
Oh, mic sharing's going great so far, guys.
I am Ashley, sharing a mic with...
I'm Les.
And I'm Kyle, but I got my own mic.
Hey, Kyle, how you been?
Oh my gosh, exhausted. I'm looking at my watch, which I still have set to Cape Town time. Like, my biological clock thinks it's 5 a.m. right now.
When did you actually get back?
Yesterday afternoon. I was supposed to get back at noon, but I was sitting at the wrong gate for my flight. Just missed my flight. Showed up five minutes after it left the gate. So then I had to stay in D.C. for 4 hours, just, like, totally zonked out. I spent over 24 hours in transit. One flight that... it was so long, we gassed up halfway. So it was like 8 hours, land on the tarmac. Security comes onto the plane to frisk you again. Like maybe you got past something the first time.
Wait, where did you land?
In Senegal, in Dakar.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so we gas up, then they load more people on the plane, and then another 8 hours. So see, 17 hours.
I'm disappointed that you landed. I was hoping you got fueled in the air like Air Force One.
Oh, that'd have been so cool.
Didn't they do that in Executive Decision? Isn't that how they snuck onto the plane?
It is. It's also in Air Force One, the movie Air Force One, and they blow up the fuel plane. Spoilers for Air Force One.
Oh, man. I was just about to watch that.
Sorry. Get off my plane, Grant.
So they searched you like as you landed there.
I counted. I was actually frisked 6 times from Cape Town to D.C.
And you still smuggled all that coke in your butt?
What? Yeah. None of them went for the butt.
You say frisked with release?
No, there's no happy ending.
I'll have
frisks.
What he's having.
Actually, I learned like the most uncomfortable thing someone can do while frisking you. It's not tapping the crotch. Like, that's expected. People hide guns in their crotches.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy tugged on my belt. That's a very vulnerable situation to be in.
What is that a euphemism for?
Exactly.
I really feel like any of us could top that. Tug on the belt, that's the worst.
Yeah, I was going to say, what if a complete stranger
whispered sweet nothings to you while doing it? That'd be creepier.
Did they maintain eye contact while they did it?
Oh, yeah, solid eye contact.
Totally diverted eyes and put his hand in my belt, felt around on the inside of it.
Where's the love, quite frankly?
Exactly.
He can't look you in the eye when he does that.
One time TSA engaged me in a relationship for 5 years, and it was a big catfishing scheme. That was much worse.
Yeah. TSA went and changed their status to "it's complicated."
Yeah, what is
messing
that mean?
With your head?
I feel like awkwardly frisking Kyle challenge is definitely on. I think we should post this on YouTube.
What a weird gauntlet to throw down.
And Ashley,
hello.
You're back here from a lot of schooling. How's it going?
Good. You know, I've been trying to do some learning. That kind of thing.
What have we learned?
Let's see. A little bit about integrals.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit of analytical chemistry techniques using an HPLC machine.
Okay.
We all know what that is.
ACTs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like you do. And that's about... Oh, and there's no buses that go to the west side of Austin. Those are the three main things I think I've learned.
Well, the people on the west side do not need buses.
Oh, you call them people. That's so cute. Bitches.
Fair. All right, guys. Well, before we get into our episode, I wanted to give you guys a quick reminder that if you guys want to help us out, you can go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a review. You can also go to patreon.com/TVDudes, make a per episode pledge, give us $1 an episode. That's not much. In exchange, every time we post an episode, we'll also post some bonus exclusive content. Patreon.com/TVDudes. Another thing that we want to remind you about is...
You know what, Grant?
No!
There's actually...
Let's just burn it through it.
There's actually another way that people can support us.
Dude, last time you said you were going to, like, give me three other reasons.
On Patreon, you can send us dollars, and we appreciate the dollars. Mm-hmm. But there are many other ways to show your support. Kyle, what is the currency in South Africa?
The rand.
We will take rands.
Yeah?
We'll take rands. Danny Rand?
Ayn Rand.
Is that why that dude's so rich? Is he like the...
If his currency is the rand, not so much. 100 rand is like $7 US, but it spends the same. So like you can buy a bottle of wine for $3.
All right. Ashley, what's your favorite fruit?
I'm going to have to go with the pineapple.
We will take pineapples.
Yeah.
We will happily take pineapples. There's probably a delivery service that will deliver pineapples in Austin to the Permanent Record Studio. So you can get us pineapples.
Kyle has a drone. Kyle could deliver pineapples via drone.
Well, I mean, that's a side business. We should get into that later. Yes.
Drone pineapple.
This sounds great. Can we use your address instead? For all these rotting pineapples?
I don't want to give anybody my address.
Oh,
we want a bunch of rotting
pineapples. We'll take payment in a lot of things. Send it to Randy's house. I'm going to post his address in the comments, so just look right below.
This went so wrong. This
went backfire. Yeah. It's such a fun prank. We also want to say that if you guys like this show and you want to find other great TV podcasts out there, we're part of the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
Nice, guys. And you guys can go check out a bunch of other shows over on permanentrcrd.com.
Permanentrcrd.com.
You guys are...
You guys tag team that. I'm going to assume that's for ladies' night.
You guys are so silly. All right, let's move on to some listener questions because it's getting hot in here, guys.
It is.
And
I was promised air conditioning.
I thought we were getting it fixed, but Outlook is not good now.
We're recording in the sweat box. If we all start hallucinating and visions, you'll know. You'll hear it.
Oof, it is. Yeah, we're all feeling it. All right, let's get to our questions. Our first... What? Where'd the questions post go?
It's Randy, on Facebook.
Randy, did you post questions up?
I did post questions up, in fact.
There it is.
Rogues Gallery page.
It's over on the Rogues Gallery page. Here it is. First question comes to us from Jonathan Haptomichael, who says, "Hi, dudes. I will not win fans with this."
Uh-oh. I know where this is going.
"But Carrie Coon really brought down Fargo Season 3 for me."
Keep going.
"Her performance was good, but the character felt like a standard character from a police procedural, but with a Minnesotan accent. Alison Tolman and Patrick Wilson brought personality to their respective cop characters in the previous seasons. Can you guys think of another ensemble cast with one other actor slash character who brings down your opinion of the show?"
So, if I may jump in to start.
Okay.
Three things. First of all, how dare you, sir?
Second that.
That was so gentlemanly.
Second of all, that is the first time anyone has ever said Patrick Wilson brought personality to the case.
He was kind of good, though, last season, wasn't he?
He actually was. I'm just saying, that's not the norm.
No one says this, No one wants to give Patrick Wilson any credit.
And finally, it's a good question, though, because the ensemble thing, and I started racking my brain for this, and I came up with one, and the one I came up with is Eliza Dushku in Dollhouse. She drags that whole show down, and Les and I were talking off mic about this.
She's kind of weak there.
She's the star, and it was written for her, and it gets so much better when it becomes less about her.
Because Fran Kranz.
Yeah.
He was really good.
No way that's his real name, right?
Yeah, he's always the Whedon proxy. Like, he's always the tortured smartass.
And the lady who was like Omega and the dude who like changed his personality all the time. I guess they all change their personality. Those two other characters were fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't remember their names, though.
Daikin Lauchman?
Are you serious? You know their names?
That's the actress's
name.
That's
the actress's name.
Is that close?
Is she named after Daikon?
Daikin Lauchman.
It's possible. Yeah,
that's rough. And Alan Tudyk.
But the other dude, the like Croatian dude. Good luck pronouncing that name. I can't even remember. He's Victor on the show, but his name is...
What the fuck? You also remember his name on the show?
Dude, Gotch, I'm a Whedon fan.
Dollhouse was not that memorable.
Yeah, he was on, not the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but the other...
Yeah, he was in the Avengers. He's the pilot that shoots at the Hulk.
Oh, that's right.
I was also thinking, this is an example we used to give a while back for this kind of question, but it's a little bit of the reverse.
Okay.
Where the show Dexter... The only good character actor in that was Dexter.
Yeah, that's...
And everyone else was just filler.
Yeah, that's
especially
true.
His sister.
Ugh. Yeah. I like that actress, but yeah, she was not...
Jennifer Angel. Carpenter?
Jennifer Carpenter. Maura Kelly on season one of The West Wing. That, her character has no business on the show. She doesn't fit. They write her off by
good
season
answer.
Two.
Yeah.
She's just, going back and watching season one, like it's easy to forget that she was ever on the show and you wonder why she's there.
That's right. Yeah. She sucked.
Well, and they talk about it on the West Wing podcast, and it's Joshua Molina who came on after she was there, but they're pretty harsh on her. They're like, here's some more Mandy crap. And he's like, basically talk about it. She sort of vanished. They just got rid of her.
When it sucks, Maura Kelly's great. Like, I really like Kelly's that actress. Great. Like, when I started watching West Wing, I was kind of stoked because of her in the cast, and then she's far and away the part on the show where I'm like, please get away from Mandy.
Yeah. Yeah. That happens. Iris on The Flash. The actress is not the problem. It's the writing of the character.
Yeah. Lana on Smallville.
That might have been the actress.
That was both. Yeah.
Basically, for Ladies Night, I'm noticing all these ladies on these shows suck.
Oh, shit. It's all misogynist at Ladies Night.
Maybe it's just us.
Yeah, maybe it is because I have a dude.
Oh, good.
Oh, save us.
Sneaking you guys in under the fucking misogyny wire.
Impossible. All men are perfect.
That's so cute because you guys are so sweaty. I was going to say, and this is horrible because I don't even remember his name, but do you guys remember season one of Parks and Rec before Adam Scott came on?
Oh, yeah.
There was the other
Mark Brandanowitz.
Yeah.
Mark Brandanowitz.
If you could take white and make it a person, that's what Mark Brandanowitz was.
It's really true. Like
the boring white guy.
Yeah, and I mean, the character was fine because they were still kind of getting their feet wet, and all of the other characters were so kind of, you know, through the roof that you forgot about him. And I didn't mind him, but he's forgettable. And then I didn't think there was room for two more, let alone one more, like, really kind of bombastic character.
Right.
So when Rob Lowe and Adam Scott showed up, I was just like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here, guy.
Well, the other thing on that show that I think is interesting is that Andy Dwyer is loathsome in that first season, and then he becomes one of the best characters in the show. And that kind of thing happens where it's like these characters – it usually goes the other way, where a character you love becomes sort of one note in a comedy, like Joey on Friends or –
No one loved him. That show's terrible.
Nobody loved Joey? Whoa, that was weird. I felt like the studio imploded.
You guys look like sad puppies. Okay, everyone likes Joey. I'm sorry. Inappropriate. Over the line.
Oh, too much.
But usually those characters go the other way, and Andy becoming a character we liked was an interesting thing.
We got a question from Ashley Moreno who says, I drink free, right?
Because it's ladies' night.
What do you have in front of you there, Ashley?
I have a Pearl Snap I did not pay for.
Hell yeah, you drink free.
Yeah, thanks. TV Dudes and Austin Beer Works.
Everyone does technically drink free. Ross Brown says, seeing as it's ladies' night, who are some of your favorite characters on TV? Favorite lady characters.
Okay.
It says lady characters.
Oh, lady characters. I have a list.
You have a list.
Someone else should start. I started making a list because I was cheating. I was looking at the questions ahead of time.
Sarah Rafferty, Donna on Suits. I really, really love that character. I mean, she kind of unfairly just gets to own as that character. Like, Donna is the magic person that just like wanders in and solves problems that like this team of badass, unstoppable lawyers, like when they get flustered at the crux of the plot of the show, Donna just wanders in and like, oh, you stupid boys, and solves that shit. And Sarah Rafferty just owns it. She's great.
Mrs. Coach on Friday Night Lights.
Oh, good one, yeah.
Love her, Connie Britton. Tasty on Orange is the New Black.
Especially this season.
Every single scene she's in makes it actually watchable, that show.
Poussey on Orange is the New Black.
Oh, yeah, she's
great character.
Fantastic.
It's like they have a lot of women on that show or something.
Yeah, nobody tunes into that show for Jason Biggs. Nobody.
Well, I got to say, like, all Golden Girls. Like
all the Golden Girls. Which Golden Girl is the best girl? I know, but it's Blanche, right? No. Who's the Who's the oldest one?
Moose.
Estelle Getty.
Sophia. Yeah, that's
Sophia. Sophia. Sophia's the best.
Yeah, she's kind of the best.
I don't know why I even ask.
I also really love, I think I might be alone on loving the show so much. We talked about it before, but I really like Insecure. I'm excited for the next season to come out. And I really like Issa Rae's character.
Yeah, she's great. All right, you want to hear my list?
Let's do it, man.
All right, so Dana Scully,
yeah.
Fantastic character. April Ludgate on Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
Cersei Lannister.
Ooh, good
love
one.
Love that character. I mean, you should hate her. I mean, I do kind of hate her, but I also love her.
Arya Stark, too, though?
Yeah, and Arya Stark, too.
I was going to say, the devil gets the best lines.
That's true.
Kyle's
the shit-eating grin.
Foreshadowing.
He's so proud of himself for that.
I took notes
that
this week.
That was adorable.
Veronica Mars is a great character. Lindsay from You're the Worst, that's a personal favorite. Elizabeth Jennings on The Americans. That's a really deep character, and she could be easily hateful if it wasn't for that. And finally from West Wing, CJ Craig.
Chloe from Don't Tell the Bee, or Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. That's the show that introduced me to Kristen. Well, Veronica Mars introduced me to Kristen Ritter, but that's the show that won me over on her.
Yeah.
What about Chloe from Smallville?
Ooh.
Allison Mack.
I did not like her.
What? I was not a fan of her.
A lot of fans did not like her. She was the stand-in proxy character for the fans, I think. But
that's true.
I knew a lot of people that didn't like her.
That's true.
But come on, she's Allison Mack.
But I feel like I didn't like most people in that show.
What about Chloe from 24?
Okay.
Okay, Clarissa explaining it all was great.
Shout out to Melissa Joan Hart.
Yes. I've seen more Melissa and Joey than probably anybody not working on that show.
Let's see. Kyle Volte says, so between GLOW and I'm Dying Up Here, are there any other periods of entertainment history you'd like to see a show about? Within those two time frames? Is that what he means?
70s and 80s? I don't know.
Or was he saying like another time frame you'd like to
just
see?
Just another time frame, I believe.
I think it would be really cool if they did like a Buster Keaton biopic type thing, kind of in the vein of Ron Howard's Genius, the Albert Einstein biopic they're doing. But like kind of, you know, his tact to making film. And
What if they combine sort of what they do with that with like the true crime and did like the Fatty Arbuckle story? Like there was, you know, it was that crazy thing where he was like accused of murder, but he didn't actually do it, but he like went down for it, and it was like many years later they found out he was innocent.
What?
Yeah, this whole thing. And I only know this because Jeb Winick referenced it in a comic that he wrote. But this famous actor who was basically accused of murdering, I think it was a kid, and it turned out he hadn't done it, but it basically ruined his career and I think might have led to his death. But it's a very – if you were to do sort of People vs. O.J. Simpson on that kind of thing.
Yeah, this has got to be like a season 4 or 5 of some Ryan Murphy anthology show, right?
Yeah.
I want like a 9000 A.D. like just show where
– Zardoz, the series.
Just a bunch of planets, air, Dyson Sphere, whatever, like all robots. And you just watch these planets blink, I guess, for an hour. I don't really know what humans are doing at that point. Are we even around?
See, if we're going to do that, I just want the Mojoverse. I want someone to do the Mojo show.
That's what we need. Alec Miracle asks, without spoilers, please, I'm only on episode 3. What do you guys think about Orange is the New Black, season 5? And to that, I say, you got to wait until we talk about it.
But we're going
to
spoil it then.
Oh, yeah. So just in general, was not a fan.
I thought it was actually one of the better. I liked it better than last season.
Same. I had stopped watching this show a couple of seasons ago, and so I pushed through finishing season 4 to do season 5, and while I didn't like the first few episodes, I really came to love this season by the end of it. I felt it really made kind of the climax plot of season 4 matter.
Ooh, we are going to have a contentious discussion.
I liked it, but it was my least favorite season.
Oh, interesting.
All right.
I haven't watched it, but I tend to find shows that stay in prison like a little claustrophobic. Like, I can only watch like a season or two of a prison show where I'm like, oh, I got to get out.
Dennis McElwain says, with the last season of Game of Thrones launching in 2019, would you advise waiting till then to start watching the penultimate season? Don't worry, I am dead inside when it comes to comedies, and that is probably the reason I dislike Coach from Cheers so much.
That was another discussion, and yes, that is why. That's the only reason anyone ever disliked Coach, because Coach is the best. But I feel like Les can speak to this.
Yeah, don't watch Game of Thrones. I mean, I don't feel like I've missed anything.
You're not going to burn through the whole thing when it's all
done? Have the dragons gotten there yet?
No. Watch it now. Watch it as it airs and then engage in the discussion. That's like the best part.
Yeah.
Watch it live. Yeah. Or close to live, so you can talk about it the next day. It's a water cooler show. There's very few water cooler shows left.
I say wait till 2029 when all the effects will look dated and watch it then and then be disappointed.
2029.
The future.
All right, last question, guys, because it's fucking hot in here. Zach McLernan says, looking at the current zeitgeist of cinematic storytelling that is the superhero genre, one question that I don't think anyone has sufficiently answered is the question of endings. Especially the CW shows and even the Marvel shows. Superhero comics are typified with being a more or less endless narrative, with a hero always being in conflict and never fully resolving their external conflicts, nor a lot of their internal conflicts, honestly. He says, similar to Dan Harmon's explanation of TV writing in that it inherently desires a reinforcement of the status quo and staying the same as a result of never truly growing. However, a TV show cannot go on endlessly, and eventually a story has to create a final ending. With all that hooba-dooba being said, how should shows like Arrow, The Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Daredevil, and the like end? Should they seemingly just end in a slice-of-life way, like how Smallville ended, or should they have a definitive conclusion, like The Dark Knight Rises? I say this because, in all honesty, I don't think the showrunners know either.
I think that was one of those erudite questions we had until the word hooba-jooba was uttered.
I think I might have butchered hooba-joob.
But that's a really interesting question because, yeah, superhero comics generally don't have an ending unless you get a guy like an Alan Moore or Frank Miller to write Dark Knight Returns or Watchmen or one of those things. So much as I enjoy Greg Berlanti's shows, he is not Alan Moore or Frank Miller, and I don't know that I want him writing a definitive Flash ending that'll get ported over to the comics in 2 years. I think the best way to do it would be to jump to the future when the hero retires and you can see them get – there's two ways to end it. Either the hero dies or the hero gets a family and retires from superheroing.
And Batman caught his last shoplifter and no more crime ever happened again.
Is Batman like an elderly security guard still wearing the mask? You kid, put down that gum.
I would never. We now live in a future where we don't steal. Thanks to you, Batman. The end.
Yeah. Those are the two options. That's what we're hearing.
I think we solved it.
I think inherently, like, comics, I feel like comics lend themselves well to TV because at least US TV wants to do this as well. Like, US TV wants to run endlessly and just have the story keep going somehow miraculously for like 20 seasons. It seems like we want everything to do that. And comics, I think it was Brian K. Vaughan that said, like, he never really wanted to work on, say, Spider-Man because there's never a third act. Like, you never get to write the third act of Peter Parker's life. Mm-hmm. He's just going to reboot high school again.
Yeah.
And so, like, all comics are kind of caught in this Groundhog's Day of the exciting period of their lives. And unless it's going to be a special event graphic novel or something, they're not going to wrap that story up. And so I'm kind of with Randy. I feel like if they give a distinct closing ending to the TV show, it's going to be weird. The comic doesn't need it.
Yeah.
And so it's going to exist. Like, I don't know. It would be strange to me. I feel like they would try to port it over the comics or try to blend it into canon or something, but it's a medium that inherently doesn't want a third act and doesn't want an ending.
Yeah. A genre.
But yeah, so I feel like comic book TV shows are just going to abruptly stop. And that's actually the appropriate ending.
I would think it'll be sort of the battle continues kind of thing, you know,
or the legacy is passed on or something like that. Right. Like Arrow passes everything over to Speedy, and they can do another show if they want or not. Or Arrow ends up finally getting the rest of the community excited enough to pick up the mantle and stop crime themselves.
Are you suggesting
he can finally retire or whatever?
Are you suggesting an Arrow community crossover? Because I am on board with that.
I would watch that.
Modern Warfare.
Don't you think? Arrows. Oh my god, Modern Warfare with Arrow, where he's just like he's the ringer they bring in. How about Abed and Felicity together? Like, that'd be fantastic.
This is what we need. All right, let's greenlight this. right, it's time for the news, and we have Randy, Kyle, and Les joining me on mic.
You guys, did you see the new Marvel trailer that dropped?
Oh, man, the Inhumans.
The new Marvel trailer dropped, guys. You know what's exciting day when Marvel has a new trailer. Marvel has a new trailer of television.
No. It could be good, though. Which Marvel television?
It's on ABC.
Oh, man.
So the Inhumans trailer finally dropped. And you know how we've all sort of kept up our optimism, like, oh, maybe those costumes look better in motion. Oh, well, that's a pretty good cast. Well, yeah, sure, Scott Buck is show running, but it could be good. Sure.
I think I saw a fan poster of this a little, like, a few months ago that had, like, it looked like some random actors from B-movie stuff, like, photoshopped in. Was that it had
yeah,
the
not
girl,
Photoshop.
No, that was that, the poster? That's the real, that's the legitimate poster.
Yeah, so, man, this trailer was abysmally bad.
I thought it was so terrible.
Yeah.
It all looks so cheap and clunky.
Yes. It looks like they filmed it on the set of, they filmed it on a Renaissance, on the Renaissance Fair. They're just like, they got it, they're like, we don't have any sets, but you guys, we're going to do the King's Throne Room for the Renaissance Fair, and we'll shoot there. And then they broke my heart because all I wanted was for Lockjaw to be in it and be good. And their CGI Lockjaw looks so shitty.
Like, they live on the moon, right?
Yeah, they live on the moon.
Oh, their moon base with its, you know, just boring concrete board.
Yeah. Like,
no, that's the worst CGI Canada I've ever seen. Like, I know that that's what that is, but it's so bad. And I hate to say it, but Lockjaw was the best looking thing in the trailer.
No, he
everything
is, and
else
that's
looks,
sad.
Everything
that's
else
the
looks,
dog?
Yeah. Everything else looks like the Masters of the Universe movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, with Dolph Lundgren. Like, that's the – all the sets look empty. Like, they didn't get enough cast or didn't have enough people to fill it out. Most of the Inhumans don't look inhuman. They just look like sad people you left on the moon.
They make Ramsay Bolton do all the talking in the trailer, and his accent's weird.
He changes it several times.
Yeah, it's not consistent. It sounds sort of Scottish, Welsh, and then goes Australian a little.
The important thing about Black Bolt is he's got to have this presence. Like, when they were talking about Vin Diesel playing in the movie, like, you can see that. He's got to have this physical power about him because he doesn't talk.
Instead, he's got scared eyes the entire time.
He's not talking because he looks like he doesn't have anything to say.
There's a bit where Maximus is given his speech, and Black Bolt and Medusa look at each other, and it felt more like something out of The Office where Jim and Pam were exchanging glances while Rainn Wilson said crazy shit about leaving the moon.
God, recast this show with the cast from The Office and I'll watch it.
Yes.
I would totally watch The Inhumans as The Office.
But it's such a miscalculation when you see this all put together. Yeah, have a comedy or something. If you don't know what the fuck you're doing, at least put funny people in there.
But this looks like there was a show, Kings, that came on right after Deadwood when Swearingen was freed up.
Ian McShane.
And, I mean, that didn't stick around for very long, but I watched it. It was good.
It was good.
This
looked
looks
great.
Like crappier court intrigue than that. Yeah. I didn't see really any the hints I saw of the powers and of the superhero stuff that would make me want to watch this because it looks like badly done court intrigue. So that's not bringing me. I didn't see that in this trailer. It looked really horrible.
I think CW's Reign has deeper court intrigue than this show.
CW should have this, and I'd probably watch it.
Yeah, I'm not gonna watch this.
There's a part of me, and unless you have this part too, that is like, Lockjaw's on my TV. I should be happy with this, but I wish I was happier before they did this character on TV.
Is Lockjaw a talking dog?
No.
Nope. He's telepathic. And
no.
No, he's not.
He's just a big dog that teleports.
Okay.
Okay.
I love Lockjaw. He's one of my favorite characters, and they're doing great things with Ms. Marvel right now. But he's supposed to be a great character, and instead he looks like a CGI prop.
They're going to use him for a lot of dog jokes, man.
Yeah. Oh man, so many.
Like, why? Why did ABC – you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and you think, oh, well, at least there's a lot of things you can learn from this and make the next show better.
Nope.
No. It's like they wholly embraced it, and everything bad about the quality of TV – it's bullshit too, because you can watch a show like FX that I'm sure has half of the budget – like a show on FX what's the fucking...
Legion?
Legion, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure that has half the budget of this. It looks amazing.
Yeah. That's the frustrating thing. It's like, it's not a budgetary problem. It is a creative problem.
No, this looks childish compared to Legion. Yeah.
You know, one good thing about this, though, is when the show tanks, whoever is going to get that guy playing Maximus for super cheap on the next project.
Silver lining.
In better news... Netflix opened Pride Month by canceling Sense8, one of the gayest shows on television.
Oh, that's great news.
And they closed Pride Month by announcing that you guys are right. We're going to give Sense8 a 2-hour finale.
Oh, yay! That's the great news.
That's gotcha. The great news.
Okay.
So it took them a month to realize that they made a mistake. But there's actually a letter from Lana Wachowski sort of expressing the, you know, how heartbreaking it was to have it final, you know, have it canceled, and how the fans getting up and getting behind it really did make a difference. And Netflix took a note and was like, you know what? We should at least give them an ending. And so there's going to be a 2-hour finale sometime next year. And Lana Wachowski says, basically, you know, this is probably the end, but if the experience has taught me anything, you never know.
Hmm. So, I'm just glad they're giving it a wrap up. I really liked where season 2 ended. I was telling Grant earlier, it's like it stopped at a... There'd been a cat and mouse back and forth, and it feels like season 2 ended with some real leverage finally against the corporation, where season 3 was going to be this great fight that I was really looking forward to seeing, like where this battle was going to go.
Yeah.
And right. And to have it just stop, like, I'm fine. I know that's a crazy expensive show to make.
Yeah, sure.
So I appreciate that it end, but I'm glad to have a wrap-up 2 hours. That's great.
Yeah, 2 hours it seems like a lot of time. That's a full-length movie.
Yes.
And if they had that whole season 3 plan, getting to condense it to just the bare bones, what you actually need to sell the conclusion of your story, at least.
Yeah, so giving me the Serenity movie, this is fine.
Yeah that's great.
Here's the thing. 20 minutes of it is going to be an orgy.
But it's going to be awesome.
Oh, it'll be fantastic. It'll be one of the best orgies ever filmed.
You're watching it on Netflix at your house, so do as you will. That went weird.
Yeah, it kind of did. Okay, so Better Call Saul, no surprise, got a season 4.
Woo!
Nice. We don't know when, how long Better Call Saul is going to go, but...
You know, it's Vince Gilligan. They fucking owe him.
Yep.
Give him his 6 seasons.
Yep.
We already outlined how the show needs to go.
Yes, we did, and although, we're right.
I feel like they should have had they should have been able to push the show a little faster this season to have it get to the point where Saul pops up and Walter White shows up.
Yeah.
But they didn't do it, so we better have that by the end of next season.
Yeah. So, you know how everybody's making TV now?
Yeah.
Netflix, Amazon, they make they like send toothpaste to people over the mail.
Yeah,
that's
Waze.
Waze has a streaming show. Yeah, it's
only shows at stoplights. It's safe.
It's actually based on the Soderbergh movie Traffic. It's
sweet.
Facebook is looking to develop original streaming TV shows.
Of course they are.
Didn't they already do that with that Social Network movie? That wasn't them.
So they are aiming...
There's a huge picture of Jesse Eisenberg on this article.
They're aiming primarily the 13 to 34 age group and will focus on reality, comedy, and drama whilst avoiding any controversial or mature content, you pussies. That is such a... They're not going to do any... That's... If you're doing streaming content, you got to be a little edgy. Come on.
I love how they're talking about not being edgy when you can go on Facebook and like watch somebody get shot in the head.
I was
point blank.
Facebook is responsible for the last like actual murder I saw,
which is why they're probably a little bit cagey about whatever they're doing for their original program.
It's like we already have enough snuff on our platform,
and I think it's always kind of weird with them. Their audience, like they know everyone, so if they're getting into this game. They know exactly who to target with what and just run their ads on specific accounts now.
Yeah.
You know what it's going to be. It's just going to be shows like The Big Bang Theory. Just most, like, playing to the lowest common denominator.
That's what I'm afraid
using
of.
All their analytical data to realize people just want shit.
Whatever Facebook makes is a reflection of our real society, and it's going
to
be depressing.
Well, and we're all going to get to see it 1 minute at a time as it scrolls in our feed as sponsored content every fucking day.
It starts auto-playing. We're like, scroll down.
I do not need to see the credits of Strangers, which is, by the way, their drama.
But I kind of want to watch Ow My Balls with Red Pandas.
We may be moving into that territory. That makes sense.
right, guys. Now it's time for us to talk about some TV shows. We are going to be talking about Orange is the New Black, followed by Glow, and then we're going to wrap things up on a cheerful note with The Handmaid's Tale.
It's ladies' night. You Woo-hoo! Know, Handmaid's Tale is all about ladies getting what they want.
Is that what it is?
I may have misunderstood what The Handmaid's Tale was about.
Well, Kyle left. Ashley's back on mic. We have Randy, Les, and me as well. And we're going to start with Orange is the New Black. This is season 5.
It's kind of dark, too, actually.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think here?
So I want to start, though. I want to start with what you thought, because I think everybody else here kind of liked it, and you did not like it.
Yeah, this season kind of brought me back around on the show a little bit, but I understand Grant did not.
I would like to say that Ashley didn't like it as well.
Yeah,
as the other seasons.
Yeah, if we're going to gang up on each other, I'm going Team Grant on this one.
But it was your least favorite season. You didn't say you didn't like it.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're teaming up, then I'm going Team Grant.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. Are we doing tag team like Glow?
Yeah, we are. And you nice. Guys are fun.
I think Les can take you.
All right.
Les, I'm tagging you in.
So this season takes place over the course of 72 hours during a prison riot.
Yeah.
And I felt that already was a bit of a problem for this show.
Agreed.
Because it forced them to try and figure out zany little plots for a lot of characters in a compressed amount of time. It didn't play out in a kind of even-paced way.
Huh.
I thought that the tone was all over the place with this. Like, already the show's kind of weird for me. I always feel like it's a bunch of waspy, rich, white people loving to just kind of peer in on this like, a bunch of poor people in prison and going, oh, yeah, I can identify with them and whatever. But it just feels kind of voyeuristic, I guess, to me. I've always kind of had a problem with the show, especially with Piper, whatever, Kerman.
Piper
is that her
Kerman,
name?
Yeah.
Who wrote this. Like, she went into prison for a year. Then she capitalized with some New York Times book tour or whatever the fuck and goes on The Moth and other podcasts. And it's just like, where's the giving back to that community versus the capitalizing for the voyeuristic crowd?
We've talked about this before, and I actually agree with you on this. It is like her jail experience was like her year at summer camp.
Yeah.
And she gets to walk away with it and doesn't acknowledge. I mean, she's trying to acknowledge that she's privileged, but she's not getting that her privilege is being able to write a book about it and continue to go on in this.
Yeah, it completely capitalizes on it. Well, and
the weakness of Piper as a character is the principal flaw of that show.
Yeah.
Like, she's the worst. She's the weakest link in the entire thing.
And that's why I like this season, because Piper's barely in it.
Yeah, that was the best thing about this season, and is that when she's not there.
Yeah, and when she is there, the other characters are pointing out that her motivations are the same cliche bullshit that she does every time. Like, oh, you have a cause, so you're going to abandon me. Great.
Yeah, I like the thing that you didn't like. When they decided to do the whole thing instead of the riot, I thought that was going to be the first two episodes of the show. And then when they kept going, I'm like, oh, the whole season's going to be about – because I thought that after Poussey died, that changed the show. Like, Poussey had a certain energy, and her leaving the show should have had that kind of drastic effect to basically cause a riot and cause all these people to start questioning what, you know, who they are and that kind of thing. I thought that made a lot of sense, to spin everybody off into a, you know, discovering themselves story. And so I've really liked that we focused in and did the whole season as the riot.
But they're dealing with like some heavy issues of like money or prison for profit and
sure.
and rape victims, how they're getting over that, and race issues and murder and the power structure between cops and civilians and black people and cops and all that. And yet the tone like will shift so dramatically scene to scene that it always throws me off on this show. It's like they're kind of riding on something heavy, and then all of a sudden there's nyuk-nyuk jokes and a bunch of weird pop references that I just see too much of the writers in this show, and I think that really bugs me.
That's
the
fair.
Writers really want to have any character be inconsistent at any moment so that they can drop in pop culture references and have them so savvy, while in the next scene, suddenly Tasty or Black Cindy will talk about how they are so out of touch and they don't know anything. But they were just like making some hip, trendy kind of reference to something. And I was like,
you know,
what the fuck? It's so inconsistent.
What's funny is that I have the same issues. Like, you're not wrong. Like, the pop culture stuff is usually – but I felt like that was toned down a lot in this season. I thought there was a lot of sort of staying with – I thought the character arc of like Red never really gets a light moment here. Red is a heavy story throughout.
Really? Her and her zany pill popping speed like fantasy that for
Red's,
8 episodes
Red's
until
it gets
interesting?
Red storyline was the part that did not work at all for me.
Hmm. I mean, I thought that she was in a dark place.
I don't think they did anything interesting with her until the very end where she gets kidnapped by Piscopo or whatever his name
Piscatella.
Is. Piscatella.
Yeah. For me, well, I don't know what this season was like to have a year between season 4 and this, between Poussey's death and this. I had stopped watching the show it for the same reasons that Nick Grant mentioned. It feels weirdly voyeuristic and it feels kind of surface. For a show that has in front of it the opportunity to deal with all of those issues every season, it's never gotten that far into them that well, in my opinion. It's always been kind of a fun show that's dealt with them and then quirked a little bit to lighten it. And then if anything, it hits on the overall sadness of their situation, but it doesn't always go into a satisfying deep dive into these women's lives necessarily. Like, I don't feel like I've learned anything great about Lorna over the course of this series.
Lorna may be the weakest character in the show.
She's loony.
But for me, having finished out season 4 in order to start watching this, I kind of binge watched the last half of season 4, and it ends with Poussey's death and Baxter being the person that they have kill her is horrible.
Yeah.
And then most shows kill a character and they deal with it for the length of time of that arc, and then it's over.
Yeah.
And then that person is just kind of in canon as this legendary person that died, but you don't feel it. Compressing the time for whatever other problems it caused made Poussey's death matter. This whole season, it never stopped for me of keeping that tragedy going. And every once in a while, they would pepper in flashbacks of her. It really made that character matter in a way that most shows, I don't feel like, do that.
I do agree with that.
That was my favorite part of the season, yeah.
And it also let me, after such a... Season 4 just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. I mean, until it ends in her death, but the shit leading up to it, there's nothing that can be done against those guards that's enough. Like, I don't care what happened to Humps in this season. Yeah. There's nothing that's enough for that fuck.
Right.
Yeah. So to be able to have some of these weird... The girls that snort coffee that are keeping the guards, the creepy cannibal one that's wearing the... like
the coffee shop that they open or the America's Got Talent or whatever. God, like, what the fuck
I was on the cover of Barista magazine twice until they figured out I was poisoning the mudbloods. Like, or whatever the hell she called. Like,
yeah.
Being able to finally see those in a show that's always been tonally inconsistent and has never spectacularly dealt with the issues. I really didn't expect season 5 to suddenly deal with the prison industrial complex. This isn't The Wire.
Right.
And the tonal shifts I kind of expected, but it is jarring. The part that didn't work for me was the role reversal of Nikki and Red. The role reversal worked. Nikki learning something worked because I love Natasha Lyonne as an actress. Mm-hmm. She does great. And Kate Mulgrew does her best, but
they gave her a shit deal this season.
After Red's literal, like, immediate previous interaction with Nikki does not leave her character in a place where she would, for any excuse, go, oh, yeah, those are vitamins, I'll snort that. The fuck she would?
Yeah.
She has been against this at every turn, and they literally just had a plot that pointed out how against this she is.
It's true.
And then they have her flip. They could have... I'm not saying it couldn't have been justified. But I needed another episode to walk her there or something.
I also thought they underserved Suzanne this season. Like, Crazy Eyes was such a fascinating character in the first couple seasons, and I thought that this year there was just like she was just like the problem to be dealt with, and that was all she was.
They just had her over the top for like half of especially like at the end when she is having kind of the break.
Yeah,
it's just so many scenes of her freaking out and screaming and. I don't know. It just felt weird. It felt like, they were doing a disservice to the character.
Ashley, what about?
I've always really liked the show. This was my least favorite season. And I think one of the things you guys are really picking up on is that tonally they want what I think Dear White People nailed, which is this balance between a sense of humor and a good story, but also dealing with really important, complex social issues that are, I mean, quite frankly, like, hot button issues for people where you're asking them to both have a sense of narrative and have a sense of humor, but also take this seriously. And it's a hard thing to do. And I will now having seen it done so well in Dear White People, I'll agree that Orange is the New Black like isn't there. However, I really love the show. I was disappointed in this season because I think what Les was pointing out, what Grant was pointing out, is all the little inconsistencies. Because I like these characters so much, I've been able to let a lot of that stuff go. But in this one, they jumped ship. Like, there's Piscatella comes back, and for two episodes, it's like a horror movie.
Yeah.
And then there's like, I mean, there's so many little vignettes that don't fit in this universe that I think it started to fall apart. With that said, that Piper's character was so small helped a lot, because I do think it's a little sad that, you know, when this season started, to be introduced to these characters had to come from this character going to jail. Yeah. That's a little bit depressing, because obviously all these other characters are clearly better. But for me, because I was still kind of trying to look past those inconsistencies, because I like the character so much, when they finally say, you know, fuck it, let's like go for it, it was too much for me. And I found myself a bit lost, being like, oh, and by the way, there's a whole bunker off to the left that nobody knows is happening. And this guy's going to break into a prison, and we're going to let a minimum security prison's riot go on for 3 days?
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing just seems
it was so absurd.
Cartoonish.
I guess I signed on to the absurdity a long time ago. Like, none of this ever seemed real to me. So, like, I mean, she was running an underwear selling scam out of the prison. Like, there's ridiculous.
For me, they hewed as close to reality as they've ever been expected to. I felt.
Yeah.
The big winners of the season for me were Tasty, which they've already done great things with her character before.
But Tasty really,
but she's really good.
Discovering her calling. She's damn good at negotiating.
Yeah.
If it hadn't been personal for her, she would have wrapped all of that up pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like the callback to like what got her in prison was that she was actually running the books for the heroin ring, wasn't she? She's got a mind for numbers.
Yeah. She's
got
good.
Like a business sense. And so that got pulled back in, I thought was really cool.
And as ridiculously unrealistic as it was, Frida is the winner of the season for me. That is my favorite character on the show now. I do feel like they made Black Cindy a one note joke, whereas I loved her Jewish conversion season.
Mm-hmm.
They turned her into the Black Lattes Matter meme joke for the whole, for pretty much the whole thing. She just fucks up Suzanne and that's it, and talks shit behind Tasty.
Yeah.
But Frida's, her dad being the survivalist nut, and even for
how
the,
that plays in,
even for the unrealistic part of the bunker itself, everything else about her was spectacular.
I do agree with that. I loved her backstory.
I've always loved that she's the crazy killer psycho who really has murdered a shitload of people, but is kind of a sweetheart if you just stay on her good side.
Like, she has a sense of justice.
Yeah,
at one point,
I think she says offhand, like, "Yeah, that's just like when I shot that cop. Wait, did I get caught for that?" Like, she's great.
I also, it was ridiculous, but I also kind of appreciated the Flocka and Bianca story, the Blanca story, the Instagram thing.
Them being vloggers was like one of the few kind of cute things that I appreciated about like what people were doing during their time there.
It made a lot of sense.
The opening the coffee shop was fucking stupid.
Yeah, okay.
Agreed.
The everyone having their little art boutique up and down the hallways.
Oh, I thought that was a good moment. I like that.
It's just where are they getting all these supplies of whatever the fuck? I don't know. It just seemed dumb.
I did enjoy the Flocka thing, the YouTube deal.
The seance was terrible.
The seance I could have done without.
Big Boo and her relationship with the woman from
MCC.
From MCC.
Yes.
That whole story I really liked.
The cunt from Connecticut.
Yeah.
Gloria on the show, who was Salinas Leva, I guess, is actress. I really liked her role for pretty much most of the season.
Yeah.
I think they got a little bit heavy-handed with her when she had to kind of deal with her kids stuff at the end.
Yeah.
But I think, like, just as far as an actress, she was fantastic. The two backstories I appreciated the most in this were both Frida and I want to say the woman's name is Janae, the runner. She was a kid when the white kids are singing at the prep school that
they
she goes
so
to.
They have so much culture, they don't even know.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was heartbreaking. Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't know why they have these backstories.
Yeah.
Like, most of them were just kind of boring, and it just seems like they're beholden to them, and they don't know how to do this well, Lost It.
I thought the polyamorous Muslim thing was an interesting story to do.
But they didn't
do anything with it.
They didn't embrace it enough.
Yeah, they didn't do anything with it, but it was interesting it was there.
At this point, I feel like it's an automatic trigger where if one of their set cameras is on one character for long enough, a backstory happens. It doesn't have to tie into anything, but like you will simply see 5 minutes from their life.
Yeah.
And
I just found myself yawning through a lot of this season, and it just felt like an endurance test.
What's funny is you guys, like, all these arguments makes perfect sense to me, but there was no point at which I was bored.
Yeah, these Ashley nailed it. I forgive a lot of this crap because I like these characters. It took me a little bit to get back into watching the show because I definitely stopped watching it for a reason, for all of the reasons we just talked about. But once I was back in the groove of it, inconsistent or not,
they're wonderful.
Yeah, when I'm in the flow of it, I don't notice the inconsistencies. I don't know that I'll rewatch this and be forgiving.
Right. Yeah.
I usually love this show. This was such a chore. But you know what wasn't a chore for me? Glow.
I thought you'd say Handmaid's Tale.
I was going to try and sing Glow to that Dare song, but I don't think I can. No. Glow.
The shoulder moves you're doing right now is really selling.
That works?
Yeah, okay, exactly. Good.
So this is the first season that dropped on Netflix, and I watched it all that day.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Same here. I actually felt a little bit – I was glad to notice that they were 30-minute episodes because I felt genuinely bad when I realized it was on episode 7.
Yeah.
And I had just sat down to like, oh, hey, Glow finally dropped. like there went my day.
I can do this. They're only about 38 minutes.
It was amazing.
It was only because it was like the busiest weekend of my life that I didn't binge the whole thing. Instead, I did in like 2 days.
So what do you guys think?
Oh, I loved it. I can't say enough great things about it.
Right?
It was super fun. And a while back, there was actually a documentary done on Glow by the same guys who did a documentary on the Rockafire Explosion, which is the animatronic band at Chuck E. Cheese's. Yes. And so I didn't really know about them until then. So that was kind of my introduction to it. When I heard they're doing a TV show, I was super excited. And I was a little nervous that thing was going to happen where your expectations are so high that even if something is pretty good, you're like, but fucking delivered.
I had exactly the same. I didn't watch wrestling really, and I didn't watch Glow when it first was on.
Yeah,
but I watched. But I saw the documentary, and then I knew that they were making a show of it, and I didn't fight to go see this at ATX Fest when they showed the premiere or anything, because honestly, I was a little bit scared that this was going to be kind of a bad camp sitcom where the source material is a better camp sitcom than the show.
Right.
Like I was afraid they were going to fictionalize it and it not be as good as the real weirdness.
Yeah.
And instead it's different in their composite characters, but it's wonderful. I mean, they finally got the runtime is perfect for the type of show it is. The season length is right. They don't run 3 episodes longer than they need to run. There's no stop seam in the middle with a subplot. The casting's dead on. Nobody but Martin Mary could have done this.
Yeah, you know how Orange and the Black Sun, they gave us like 20 new female actors who we'd never seen before. We're now all over the place. This is going to be the same thing. Like the male characters in this are people we know from something or somewhere.
Well, we know Mark Maron. Yeah.
Well, it won't make him happy, but I hope this makes Mark Maron rich for life.
But the other, Chris Lowell, who plays Bash, that guy's been in a bunch of stuff. I mean, he was in Enlisted, but notably he was Piz from Veronica Mars.
Like, that's right.
He's been in some things. And then Rich Sommer has played a douchebag in, I think, every show on television.
He has played a douchebag.
I don't want to besmirch the guy, but I'm starting to wonder about Rich Sommer's character because he always plays the douchebag.
He just looks like such a good douchebag.
He does.
Yeah, but the only woman that I really know from this was Alison Brie, who sort of had to fight for the part because they didn't want to cast anybody known,
and they didn't. It was supposed to be an ugly character.
Yeah,
she disappears into it.
Yeah,
she really vanishes into it. She's great.
Yeah, but all these characters, all the different characters they've got are so good. The Legacy, who's what's her name?
She's Mountain Fiji, but she's not. She's Machu Picchu. Yeah.
Yeah. Her character's name was like the Lumber Jacksons. Like,
oh yeah, her family's the Lumber Jacksons.
I love that character. I love the girl who turns out to be, spoilers, Mark Maron's daughter. Which, yeah. by the way, that was I did not see that coming, and that was a great scene.
Oh, it's so skeevy.
I love the...
Yeah, what is her... The real wrestler is like jailbait or something?
Yeah.
God.
The Indian woman who's forced to play the terrorist.
Yep.
Beirut. The two old biddies, like literally every
That's
character.
Real. No, the battling biddies is real.
Really?
Yeah, no,
They're
they
like
did
two
that shtick.
Housewives
It was two comedians. They were terrible at wrestling. They got hurt in the training, and one of them was like, yeah, so we were like, screw that, our wrestling's awful. So they just did a shtick instead. Uh-huh. They put an avocado mask on and so they weren't villains or heroes. They would come into the ring and like, you're all whores. You're all dressing like whores. Oh, you brought your child here? Really nice, sir. And like, yeah, they were. I couldn't believe it. I went back and watched the documentary and was like, holy crap, the Battle in Biddies
is
real.
How much of this is based on actual... I thought this was all original characters and stuff.
They mix
it. The names are, but they're pretty... like, Americana is like a real wrestler, and she's clearly okay. Liberty Bell.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a character that's Jailbait.
Yeah.
There's a character...
Machu Picchu. There really is a Mountain Fiji, instead of Machu Picchu.
All right, okay.
Who is like a positive character that everyone likes, who's very sweet.
Yeah.
Kind of
interesting. I didn't know how much this is actually drawn from the real
Natochka. Like there really is.
There's pretty close.
She's not Dora or Zoya the Destroyer. She's Natochka. Like there really is a Russian super character. The documentary's on Netflix as well. Is totally.
Well, who was it? Like
that.
Matilda the Hun or something? Who's like beef?
Yeah. Yes, and she ate raw steaks on stage, and so yeah, and she is still terrifying. Like that woman's in a wheelchair, but will stand up and just terrify people. She's awesome.
So I want to talk about. All the great women on the show, but can we talk about Marc Maron for a minute? Because God, he killed it here. He was so perfect.
Maybe that's just Marc Maron. Like I don't know. Like I know he's a chain smoking curmudgeon, but Jesus,
he eased right into this perfectly. Yeah. Everything he delivered, I bought as Sam.
Well,
Sylvia.
Because he rolled out of bed and showed up, and they started filming.
Yeah,
I don't know. Is there more to talk about?
Is this Marc? Do you think it's just Marc Maron?
What's his opening line? Like fuck it, they hired me, or I said I'd do it, or something
yeah.
like.
Yeah. I said I'd do everything. Yeah,
yeah. From the start, I said I'd do anything for money. So let's start.
Considering it's a show about women wrestling, I guess if we want to talk about Marc Maron, I think we covered it.
Yeah, that's good.
He got out of bed, and there he is.
Although I do think that probably the most uncomfortable moment of the show was when he tries to make out. I'm like, he's not going to And then it was worse. It was like it was bad enough that he was going to hit on this underage girl, and then it was his daughter. It was like 10 times worse than I thought it was going to be.
He's like a skeevy updated version of Tom Hanks from League of Their Own.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
But
exactly
the women rule this show. The storyline between Alison Brie's character and her friend, that they nailed the home record story very realistically. Yeah. For a half-hour comedy, I bought that. Like, I bought the hurt that she did to that woman.
Yeah.
And how they ease them into, like, actually working together. That's a tough sell.
Yeah.
And for them to massage it to the point where you get why Debbie would want to actually step in that ring, and because it's something that actually drives her. It's what she wanted, an empowering role to actually play.
Yeah. Even after their first good performance together, working together after like, what the fuck is she still doing here level, I think Alison Brie looks over at her like, we did it, and her friend's like, no don't touch me, we're not there. Like they played that relationship and the damage to it and the rebuilding of it so well. Like, they didn't rush it back into besties,
right?
Haven't heard legitimately. The look on that actress's face when she walks in to legitimately beat her ass in the middle of that practice was dead on. I bought it completely. I couldn't believe that a comedy nailed this better than so many dramas I've seen.
Yeah. I also – the 80s-ness of this whole thing, it's so easy to make the 80s like too goofy or on the nose or like a parody of itself. This felt like the 80s of GLOW. Like, the music choices were perfect. The costumes are perfect.
The birth control tests are fucking complicated.
Holy shit.
Jesus, could you imagine that shit? You have to piss in a tray, and then I'm a fucking chemist. And my
Boyle
God,
and Erlenmeyer, like, oh, what the fuck am I doing here?
And then they take you to some clinic that's everything's yellow. Like, what the hell?
Oh,
it was real 80s.
Yeah. Their entire, like, all Maron's lines in the clinic for when they go for the abortion.
Just,
oh my God. I had to pause that show and rewind for so many lines.
The one panel on the ceiling that's painted like
that's
clouds.
That's painted clouds?
Yeah.
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 Oh my God.
That is every OIGBN's office. It's like there's like one sad mobile like hanging somewhere.
I really appreciate how this really took its time as well, building up the actual athletic craft of being able to wrestle for them. Like, these are all women that they're athletic, quote unquote, but they're not trained to be wrestlers.
Right.
And so this takes time. And, you know, the what do you call it? The coordination, the
choreography
that you need to kind of learn. They really do great montages to kind of build up to that.
Yep.
And even then, ultimately at the end, their big wrestling matches are in a way kind of lame next to like what we would think of as like modern day wrestling showmanship.
Yeah.
But like for the time period, for where they were coming from, it just all felt like perfectly fitting to that.
But that episode 7 where they first do the wrestling,
episode 7 was so good.
They have the that's when the Dare montage happens where they're training.
Transformers Dare, Sam Bush.
Isn't it that Ruth and Debbie are training for their flying move? Are they training with the Jackson brothers? Isn't that the deal? It's like
gone and gotten the Jackson brothers.
And that montage where they're training and they cut to their first match, like that was a great episode. It might be my favorite episode of the season.
Like, where are you talking? And then later, I think Mark Maron like sees a vision of what it could be.
No, that's at the first episode.
Yeah. Okay.
No, this is where they're learning to jump. Like, she's learning to
jump. Oh, right. They go over to Machu Picchu's brothers. Yes.
on the porch. Yeah.
By the way, I don't get wrestling. I've never gotten wrestling. There's a huge crossover between wrestling and comics fan. I've never been a wrestling fan. This was the closest I've ever gone to, like, okay, I think I start to get what people see in this.
So, I don't know about you guys, but because I was watching the show, you know, I go on YouTube and obviously I'm Googling like the Glow rap because I need to see the actual rap, which is totally worth watching. And
okay.
A couple episodes and things of that sort.
So now that you're back from watching the Glow rap, because I know you all went and Googled that and paused the podcast.
I'm sorry?
He's talking to the audience.
I'm talking to the audience.
Everyone
just went and Googled the
Glow rap. I thought
you
were interrupting women on ladies' night.
Sorry.
Damn,
I was.
Randy.
I was. That's why I feel bad.
But I'm joking. Sort of. But you guys should go watch it.
Well, actually, Ashley.
Oh.
So after you watch it.
I'm sorry. What was it? Oh, right. So.
Sorry, my dumb joke interrupted your thought. I'm sorry. No.
I'm kidding. So one of the many things that YouTube recommended to me was there is a Family Feud where actual gorgeous ladies of wrestling do a Family Feud against some of the like male wrestlers, and it's awesome. And one of the male wrestlers is Z-Man, so you get to see a name tag that actually says Z-Man. And the way you'll know he's Z-Man is that he's a big strong guy like the other guys, and he's wearing a muscle shirt, but there's a Z cut into his shirt, Zorro style.
That's it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so he's the Z-Man, and they Family Feud against each other, and it's amazing.
There's a tiny clip of that in that documentary. I think is it Richard Dawkins that hosted Family Feud?
Yeah.
Richard Dawson.
Richard Dawkins, that would be great.
Oh, he has resting bitch Dawson face through the entire episode.
I want to say Mountain Fiji picks him up over her head or Matilda the Hun or something does.
Yeah, like the real one. It's
and so
awesome.
They only show that clip, and I would love – all right, I'm going to have to YouTube that entire Family
Feud. After watching maybe 5 or 6 episodes of Glow, a couple wrestling matches of Glow, the Glow rap that, as Randy pointed out, you guys should Google. But we watched the entire Family Feud episode. It's brilliant. And Z-Man is a solid player. He delivers for the team.
So the Glow rap just made me think of Wildcats with Goldie Hawn.
Oh, my God.
Like, that, so much of this show put me back in the mindset of like 80s Goldie Hawn movies.
We've probably just sent all of our listeners down a YouTube hole.
I also liked I don't know where this show's going to go in the second season, but I was thinking that there was a good potential for a relationship between the Bash character, the dude who's like financing everyone, and Machu Picchu, the Carmen lady.
Yeah.
Like, I liked how like it was kind of cute between them. Like, when he comes to kind of like back her up and then confides in her, and they kind of they just like have this chemistry that just seemed really natural. I was like, oh, okay.
I loved him running out and trying to really help Machu Picchu with her family. Like, she needs to stay because she's secretly in love. And the dad just looked at him like, if y'all are going to be wrestlers, you have to sell bullshit better than this. Like, that's terrible. I don't believe your characters.
I love the guy they had playing her dad. He was
Oh, my God. When he slaps Mark Maron to the ground, was just amazing. And then Mark Maron's reaction, like, man, do what you need to do to make whatever you need to do to leave. Like, kill me, just leave. Yeah. Like, I love Marin's, like, it's the ultimate loser win fight. Like, oh no, I can't fight you. I'm just going to take the beating.
I know the defeat is here.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think for a season two then? Do you think they're going to renew this?
No. Oh, yeah, it has. Yeah, no. Of course not.
Of course. I'm sure it was immediately greenlit. Yeah. But, I mean, I guess they would just kind of start getting big. I don't know. I hope it's not like such a slow burn that it's like just the beginnings of getting a TV gig or something.
Weirdly, the second season is all going to be a riot.
Yes.
Damn it!
Yeah, they're going to take.
Wait, this is filmed in L.A.
Yeah.
Too soon.
Oh.
Too soon.
So I wonder though, are they going to do? Yeah,
that was in 1993. L.A. riot. Wait, was that?
They're going to jump forward a bit.
Look, I make jokes about Jesus' death, and people still get mad.
Sir, we are above a church.
That's like 2,000 years.
Spoiler alert! Dude.
Spoiler alert! I'm sorry.
Oh, spoiler! He comes back.
Oh. Jesus, Randy, I didn't. We are really above church. I gotta stop. Are they really gonna do what happened to Glow, where the money just stopped and it just ceased? It just went off the air. Like, it seemed to be doing fine. There was a rumor they mentioned in the documentary that Glow was actually a tax write off. That it was an infomercial that they threaded the ads throughout and had the wrestlers advertise products during the show. And so the show itself was a tax write off infomercial that was never meant to make money and just had wrestling sketches.
That's a fantastic second season.
But I don't know if that's apocryphal. Like, I don't know if that's verified. But a couple of the lady wrestlers mentioned it in the documentary.
But it almost doesn't need to be. It's fiction. So but
in the fictionalized version, I wonder if they're going to have
Bash's
money run out, or like the mom go, "Hey, like we're stopping this."
That would be a great storyline for season two.
I hope this just goes alternate to reality and this becomes hugely successful. Yeah. And in the future, everyone's women wrestlers, just like in his script. It's like a dystopia.
Like a Bill and Ted future.
Where all the women rule the earth.
Yeah, I agree. I want to see that.
All right. And that brings us to The Handmaid's Tale.
The feel-good tale of the summer.
It was a hoot.
Ashley is out the door as we say this.
We sent Ashley out the door. For the Handmaid's Tale discussion, we've decided to have Ashley actually stand out in the parking lot of the building.
We gave her a nice little white bonnet to wear.
Yes. Yeah.
But this is a man's discussion.
Sorry, ladies. When I realized that she was leaving, I was like, oh shit, are we really, we're really losing our one female?
She hasn't seen it yet. You know, she's missing out because holy shit, this is one of the best shows I've seen in a long time.
I already like Hulu's production value. I really enjoyed The Path. I really enjoyed Chance. They make a good looking show. Like Hulu has shown me that they can make in Handmaid's Tale, they stepped that game up. This thing's beautiful. Every shot, every scene, they get the tone of the novel for me, the loneliness and the amount of time and the weird psychological abuse of it.
The claustrophobic close shots, the expansive shots to like really nail down the like solitude of these ladies.
And they get the lighting just right. There's something about it that feels Pennsylvania Dutch Amish a little. Like it feels like old country lighting.
Yeah.
But you do see outside shots where you know you're in modern times, kind of.
It's all got like a, I'm guessing, a blue gel over it that like get makes it a little bit somber on top of what's already a depressing show.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, this is dystopian in a way that at first I was like, no, like how could a society get to this point? This is kind of absurd. But they thread it through in such a way throughout the season that I'm like, oh shit, piece by piece they could build
the porn burning pile
up society.
Yeah, when they started doing that's I was at the same place when they first saw that. I'm like this is horrifying, but I'm not sure I'm 100% buying this. Like, there's no way. I mean, bad as things have gotten in some ways, I never thought we'd get to this point. And then they start with the flashbacks, and especially when the protests are going on and they just start killing the crowd, and I'm like, oh shit, that's all it would take.
There's that there's the porn burnings that are going on, and people are just kind of like, that makes me uncomfortable. But so you've got these promise keeper kind of groups that are rising up and organizing and are getting just kind of biding their time.
Yeah.
And then when a Children of Men style pregnancy cataclysm happens,
yeah,
these groups are poised to go, we told you, sinners. Yeah. And I mean, I think about every time a hurricane hits anywhere and it's immediately there's some 700 Club asshole who says it's the gays' fault.
Yeah.
Or Louisiana deserves this for sin, or America earned this hurricane for sin, or something. Like there's one of those people every time, and I keep like if
that actually
they,
was
they threaded
catalyst.
It through really well. And Margaret Atwood, all her books are terrifying like this because they're all believable shit that you go, that is definitely a future we will move towards. That's a scientific advancement we will try to do, or that is a societal thing that we would do. That is how wrong it would go. And yeah. That is probably how we'd react.
The interesting thing for me is when, as we get later into the season and we start to see a little more behind the power, the eyes and the commander, and we see that these guys are just as corrupt, just as human, that ultimately they're venal and corrupt, and they got their way, and they're enjoying being the patriarchy.
Listening to how they're going to justify this bullshit to the wives so that they, of course, can be the chosen men.
Yeah.
And in the book, they outright say that obviously no men are sterile in the future.
Right, yeah.
This is only afflicting women.
Yeah.
Clearly, every man is virile, right?
All the men say that.
Yeah. So that this is only ever, so that it's only ever admitted that either women are sterile or not, or fertile.
Yeah.
And so it's a big deal when Serena tells the commander, it's not yours because God wouldn't let your weakness reproduce.
Yeah.
Like, that's a fucked up thing to say, especially in a society where, then again, she's the Phyllis Schlafly that wrote this bullshit.
Yeah.
So you don't get to read anymore because you made this society and then you handed it to corrupt men who went, okay, so which piece of this do I need to repeat back to you so that I can do what I want?
Yeah. Cool. Mrs. Waterford, played by Yvonne Strahovski, who, by the way, I thought this was just one of her best. She's done great stuff, but this is her best role. I hated this character so much because she's the one who sold everybody out. Like with the men, you're like, okay, well they're stupid and evil and all, but she's like thrown over her own, like her own sisters basically for what?
I mean, it's so like, I can't necessarily say like, I hate you so much. I find it just fascinating and tragic. Like, like whatever's going on with her and her relationship with Joseph Fiennes, whatever
the commander,
the commanders, and their power struggle and like the shit and how it all just like, I guess, trickles down and like fucks her over.
Yeah,
but she has to kind of smile and embrace it.
Yeah,
I don't know how I feel about it.
The last episode where she basically threatens Offred's child in order to keep her under her thumb, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, fuck this bitch. I don't like her anymore.
I've never watched 10 hours of a show where I've directly hated 99% of the cast.
Yeah.
In every scene, I have like one or two characters in a scene that I'm rooting for. And in every scene, I yell at the TV screen, kill everyone in that room and burn that fucking house down right now. Whatever building you're in. I mean, when they fire them all and they come around and just shrug their shoulders in one of the flashbacks and go, sorry, ladies, you all have to go home. No, burn that.
Kill everyone
I looked over at my wife's like, burn that fucking building down. Honey, if that ever happens, you set fire. Everyone set fire to every building they're in right now. We burn this whole country down until it's done.
Yeah.
Like every scene, I'm yelling at the screen going, I know that this will get the main character killed. You will not make it out of this room, but I need you to try. I need Offred to kill five people in this room and die trying.
Well,
don't let this stand.
When she runs into Moira again and Moira has sort of given up. And that was heartbreaking because I'm like, I didn't like her at that point. And I understand where everyone's coming from. Like, you have to survive. And
when she looks at her,
you have to do. Yeah. But that like Offred was looking for. And then the same heartbreaking thing when Offred tells the ambassador, she works up her courage and tells her what they do. And the ambassador's like, I'm sorry, you shouldn't have told me. There's nothing I can do for you.
The ambassador doesn't care. Yeah.
Yeah.
I need babies.
Yeah.
Well, and Offred's line nails it.
That was such a good
one. When she's like, you know, but my country's dying. Like, my country's already dead.
Yeah.
And with the implied, if your country does this to survive, your country dies.
Yeah.
That no society doing this survives. And that's honestly, when they paraded all the kids into the room.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I was yelling at the screen for one of the people to snap every child's neck. I wanted to see Anakin walk in there and kill every fucking tiny Jedi in that room. Yeah. Because fuck Gilead. The whole next generation dies. You all watch it happen. Yeah. I'll stand there and laugh going, your society stops now. I've ended it. Fuck your generation.
Yeah.
When I have never been this angry at a TV show for 10 straight hours in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was so good still. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Finished it out. Couldn't stop watching.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Well, when they get deeper into Gilead, I mean, at first I thought, you know, we're in a corrupted America and it's, you know, this power structure. But when you see that it was like a rebel attack, like they coordinated and they took out the power structure.
Yeah, they did this.
And replaced it. Like they built this. Yeah. This was not a slow slide.
No, Promise Keepers false flagged this.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man.
Not Promise Keepers, but a...
More or less, let's be honest.
This show starts
Protestant
off,
Sharia group.
The show starts off with such small victories initially and you're like just so grateful even for those.
Yeah.
Like... She goes and she plays Scrabble and then she like steals a book or something. I'm like, yeah. Oh, and then she tags something. I'm like, fuck yeah. And then it builds up to where she's finally, they're all supposed to stone the one girl, Madeline Brewer's character. Yeah,
Janine.
With the eye.
Yep.
And she goes up and she just drops a rock and she's like, I'm sorry, Auntie or whatever her name is.
Yeah, I wanted Aunt Lydia.
I wanted, like, I wanted to stone Aunt Lydia to death. Yeah,
yep.
Me too.
No, I think... Ah, it was so powerful, well, just
but,
like that.
But this is the thing, Les and I were talking about off mic, is that the biggest victory we get is that they all don't stone someone to death, but you know they're all still going to suffer for it. Like, there are no real victories here. They're all Pyrrhic victories. They're all such small things.
What, how can they suffer for it when they're the last chance of life?
Yeah.
When they all actually band together, they are a credible threat.
Right.
It's basically the plot of Ants.
Yeah.
So the book ends, well, the book has an epilogue, but the book's linear narrative plot ends where season one ends. It ends with Offred getting into a van. She doesn't know if Nick is I or if he's part of the resistance. He just says, you got to get, you know, he just says, go with them.
Yeah.
And you don't know if he's saying that is like, go with them so that they don't kill you throwing your ass in the van. Like,
but,
hey,
but she knows he's the eye in this season.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she knows he's eye, but she doesn't. Also, she doesn't know if maybe he's also
double agent.
And in the book, she doesn't know either. And so it ends. It ends with you with her getting in the van and you not knowing. But then the book has an epilogue where you realize that all of this has been transcripts of cassette tapes that they found of Offred recording her story and hiding the tapes.
13 Reasons Why.
So yeah, it's 13 Reasons Why. And so you're hearing this the whole book. Is a transcript being taught at a symposium of historians studying the Gilead era. And it's they're in a country that is not the United States, but it's what happens after because this shit stops.
Hmm.
And so they're in a country now that has rights for women and freedom of religion, and they're studying this weird bubble.
Ah.
So the happy ending is not how they finally stop this bullshit. It's just knowing that if humans last long enough, this crap will collapse.
See, that's the question. Where do they go with season two? Because the danger is you don't want to turn this into like a resistance story.
Yeah, but similar to Leftovers, they're off book now.
Yeah.
So I read about Elizabeth Moss joining this show, and her conditions were that she was told, "We want you to be the lead in this show, but the show is the plans are for it to go 7 seasons."
Oh wow!
And if that's the case. A, that's quite an arc that they already have kind of built in for where they want this to go.
I really hope they have Atwood more involved with where they take this then. That's a long way to go off book.
Seriously. But Elizabeth Moss said, okay, if I'm going to be a part of this, I've been a part of a lot of shows. I think I actually have been a part of a lot of good shows. And if you look at her track record, fuck yeah she has.
Yeah.
West Wing and
Mad Men.
Mad Men, obviously.
Yeah. And she's like, well... If I'm going to be a part of this, then I want executive producer credit on this because I'm going to need to have a lot of say in what you guys do. I know it works and what doesn't, especially for what works for me.
Right.
And so, yeah, she got it.
Oh, she kills it.
And it's awesome and it's so worth it because, yeah, she kills it.
I did not realize that she's a Scientologist. I saw somebody point out that they felt it was ironic that she is a... prominent Scientologist doing a show about weird cult religion taking over.
Yeah, I did not realize that either. That's
and that really didn't click for me. Like, I don't.
Yeah,
that's, Scientology is really, but I don't. I'm not worried about Scientologists taking over the country.
But it's an interesting layer.
But yeah, it's odd that she's part of a prominent controversial religion.
Well, I do see that Margaret Atwood, and you never know what this means, but she's listed as like a writer and a supervising producer.
They brought her in to consult. There's some stuff in the book. Gilead is racist in the book. They are not black women. That they are. They're not misogynistically breeding.
Okay.
And so, so in the book, they kind of hand wave it away. In the book, they just send all the like anybody who's not white off to colonies, basically. And so they said early on that they realized immediately that I don't care what justification you give, you can't have a character say one line in episode one that explains why for the rest of the season there will be no people of color on the show at all.
You can't make that show in 2017. Like,
you're not making the rest of those episodes. I don't care how well you justified this. Your show better be about the damn Klan.
Yeah.
Or you better show those colonies
Even then, exactly. You got to show the colonies.
I imagine we're going to see more of that. Alexis Bledel's character, off Glenn in this.
Yes.
Wow. I mean,
yeah.
It really hurt to watch that, but it was so good. And she's apparently going to be back next season in some capacity, which I would imagine we're going to see the colonies.
I don't think in the books you ever see the colonies, because like Offred doesn't go, so I don't think you ever see the colonies in the book, if I remember right. So there's always this is it or isn't it bullshit.
Yeah, is it a farm upstate?
Yeah, are the colonies bad? Like, are the colonies like being sent to the Americas from England, where people in England might go, oh yeah, no, that's a death sentence, but there's people in America going, yeah, I'm so glad I'm not in England anymore.
Yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe it's more like how we thought Moira was dead, and then it turns out she's actually a
hooker
Jezebel.
Yeah.
Prostitute, slave, I guess, in a hotel.
Yeah.
Concubine. Yeah. Man, yeah, this was an intense watch, and it's pretty brutal, but it's fantastic.
It's a beautiful, amazing, well-acted, well-made show. There's a lot of shows that I don't watch because they're not fun, or they leave me feeling shitty at the end.
Yeah.
And same with 13 Reasons Why. I pressed through this one. It is so well made. It's worth your time, even though it's the angriest I've been at a narrative in years. Not because it's badly made. This isn't like me yelling at Britt Marling.
No.
Like, this was me just yelling, kill everyone in the room. I know you'll die trying. It's worth it.
Yeah, I think I agree there.
Totally.
All right, guys. We're going to wrap it up here. We had all five of us here on the episode at some point or another.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And it's hot in here.
Yeah, it is.
Randy, you want to stick around? We'll do a little bit of a Patreon thing?
Sure.
Let's do it. All right, guys. We're going to wrap things up. Les, thanks for joining us. Thanks to both Ashley and Kyle for joining us earlier. And thank you, listeners. Until next week.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.